Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Uniting Melba and podcast through the Toorak Times. It's always a pleasure to bring you through their stories, life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. Hello, I'm Rob Greaves and this is part one of a three-part program featuring the life and times of Helen Harmer. Born in 1941, Helen shares her earliest memories of life and activities in and around Warrigal, which is located about 100 kilometres southeast of Melbourne. In her very young years, Helen played with boys due to a lack of girls around her, a situation that continued until she started school. Her stories of her school experiences are very interesting, and certainly tales of her first country school brings about lots of laughter. Growing up as a kid during the years of World War II meant kids relied largely on their own resources and imaginations, as there were very few toys and even less children's books. We learn about her father, who was a key person in her life and a man of many talents and attributes, who, amongst his many jobs, was at one point a member of John Cain Sr.'s government. Eventually, the family leave the rural life for a semi-rural life in what was then the underdeveloped suburb of Doncaster. This move brought about many changes and new challenges, such as mastering urban transport. Let's make a start. Here I am, talking with Helen. First of all, Helen, thank you very much for inviting me into your home. Could I start by asking you, when were you born and whereabouts were you born?
I was born in 1941, during the war. I was born at Warrigal in a little tiny bush nursing hospital, and we lived out of Warrigal. We didn't live in the town itself, so we lived north of Warrigal in a small, tight-knit community of about 20 homes. My dad had a dairy, and he used to process the milk from the farmers around, and there was we're in a community with a family who owned a sawmill in Warrigal, so right. Their sons and whatever were loggers and timbermen, and they drove the trucks out to New G and got the logs and brought them into the sawmill. And a few other locals. There was the local butcher. He lived up the road from us. A couple of droving families whose fathers were drovers, and they lived. But it was about 20 homes.
So everybody would have known everybody else.
We lived in each other's places. We were the only home because my dad was... he didn't go to the Second World War, so he was part of the essential services.
Protected industries, yes.
And... So we were the only family that had a telephone in our community, and every Saturday afternoon the men would get into our big kitchen, and a nice little betting ring went on because we only had the tiny telephone, so there was lots of going backwards and forwards. But no, it was a very tight-knit community. They did things together. My mum and dad were married in 1938, and I had an older sister. I was the second one of five children.
Oh, right.
What I was going to say is the community that we were in, there were farms all around us. So we played in the paddocks, but there was a sort of a funny spread of children at the time. There were a couple of two or three girls of my older sister's age, no girls of my age, only boys. So I played with boys right up until I went to school. But we all mixed in together pretty much, you know. Someone would find something really good to do, like let's go tadpoling and off we'd all go, or let's go blackberrying and off we'd all go.
Sounds like it was a very healthy lifestyle.
Oh, we had a freedom. I think our generation was built of freedom and resilience, actually. It was the famous saying, Mum was always really busy in the kitchen and doing everything, and She used to say, go outside and play, so you're outside unless it rained.
You mentioned your mum. What sort of woman was she?
Very small. That's a photo of her as a child over there.
All right.
She was the last child of my grandfather. They came from Cornwall, and her mother died when she was two from breast cancer.
Oh, how sad.
And they got a nanny to look after her. Her eldest sister was 19 when she, when my mum was born. And they were a big spread out family. Mm. They were a farming family. They originally started in Ballarat. Her dad owned butcher shops and they were quite wealthy. But he died of Parkinson's when she was 10. So her elder brother virtually brought her up.
Yeah.
And she had a stepmother at that stage who was pretty cruel to her. And she ended up with her older sisters and she lived with them. She went to school with her nephews and nieces. They were in farming in Colac and Drysdale out of Geelong. And they all had farms in the Cressy area. And then her eldest brother moved to Harkaway and went on a big dairy farm. And he and his brother ran the dairy farm for right up until...
So farming really has been part of your whole family's life for a long time.
My father's family were farmers too. They were in Harkaway. In fact, my grandfather's house is still there.
How wonderful.
It's heritage listed by the Casey Society.
Right.
But it's not in good condition. We saw it last year and I was showing my grandchildren their great-grandfather's house that he built.
And I bet they thought it was small.
No, it wasn't. It was a big house. Because he kept building. He was a plasterer by trade and he thought he wanted to go farming.
Well, it seemed to have worked.
He lived in Morty Alec. He was a plasterer and he did the plastering on all the... in the State Theatre in Melbourne, the
Goodness.
Ceiling.
He was a real craftsman, just a plasterer.
No, he was a real craftsman.
Right.
He did all the statues in the Regent Theatre on the... I think it's the Regent, one of the ones that's got statues along the sides of it.
How wonderful for the family to have something sort of so endearing and long-lasting to remind you of him, you know?
He was an amazing man. He was a big Scottish man. He married an Irish lady.
Oh, goodness.
He went to the Boer War when he was 16.
God.
He served in the three wars. He served in...
Three?
Yes. The last one, the Second World War, they said he was too old to send overseas, so they kept him on... I don't know what they call them.
Sort of like a home guard type
home
thing,
guard,
was it?
Yeah. Reserve,
yes.
And he died in his vegetable garden at the age of 85. So
what a wonderful place to go, in somewhere where you really enjoy being. That was a lovely story.
Yeah.
You mentioned school. Do you recall your first school?
Yes, my first day at school. My sister, who was in the year above me, she was only 15 months older than me, and I was 4 and a half. She took me to school on the first day. We had to walk a mile to school and walk a mile home again. And when we got to school, she gave me to the teacher. And the teacher thought I was too small to go to school, so we walked all the way back home again.
Oh, no.
And Dad had to take me back with my baptismal papers to prove that I was
big enough.
Yes. And so
That was a lot of walking for a little girl.
And I sat on a big book so I could reach the table. But I was pretty small. I was
tiny. Were the classes mixed age groups or were you in
I was in a country school, so we had, which always didn't play to our favour because the teachers didn't change because during the war and after the war there were lots of, what do you call them, women whose boyfriends never came home from the war,
right.
So there were lots of miss this miss right. that, and yes. whatever. And because they stayed pretty put in the one place, they didn't move around. So for years and years and years, you would you just followed your sister's steps in whatever grade. And of course, if she was very good and you weren't, well, you were told.
Were you very good?
No. I ended up a school teacher, would you believe? But
do you remember those early years at school fondly or not?
Yes, I do, because I, when I first went to school, there were separate grades. I suppose I was thinking about this morning, I think our grades, they were very large grades. So there would have been about 150 altogether.
In a country school?
At Warrigal Primary School. Because a lot of the town children went to Warrigal Primary School.
Okay.
And we came in, sort of thing. But I was left-handed and I was made to write with my right hand.
Yeah.
I was in grade two. I used to sit on the platform a lot and do my work. And my grade two teacher approached my parents and they took me down and put a pair of glasses on my nose and then I could suddenly see and write. And she was the teacher who put the pen in my left hand and said, "Here, you write with this, put the pencil into my left hand."
That was very progressive for that period of time, wasn't it?
Yes,
because a lot of kids were really forced.
Yeah, no, she gave me the pencil and said, "Here, write with it and put it into my left hand." So,
and life changed quite dramatically.
It did. I could see and read at the same time.
Yes.
No, I had very fond memories, but, you know.
And this is Listen to Older Voices, Ageless Stories on Ageless Radio. I'm Rob Groves and I'm talking with Helen Harmer, and Helen is sharing some of her recollections of life as a child.
Bit of bullying came along. There was only one other boy and myself in the whole of the school that wore glasses.
Oh.
So.
And you were picked on for that?
Oh, yes. Four eyes and headlights and.
Wow.
But I had a big sister who. Children sorted out things on the way home.
Yes.
I'd tell her whatever and, you know, Johnny Brown was. Bullying me, and Johnny Brown ended up in the gutter and went home all dirty for his mum to clean up or something, you know. Children sorted out their own.
So she was a good big sister.
She was an amazing big sister. And although she wouldn't let me play with any of her friends, there was...
Oh, there's some boundaries. Yeah, the big sister,
there were very
yes.
definite boundaries, yes. Yeah. And she was a good big sister. She... Being in the country and whatever, our life was very different, and the oldest ones were often made to do lots of things and around and whatever. I ended up, I had two brothers and another sister, so there were three girls, two boys. The first one, Richard, he died when I was about five. And the fifth one, Robert, came home from hospital. They didn't think he'd survive. And my mother was determined to have an heir for the family. And every time Robert cried, he was put in the doll's pram and Nanette and I wheeled him to sleep. So there was a lot of walking around the kitchen, a big kitchen. And... in fact, we've got a photo of the three girls standing with two of us with our dolls in prams, and the doll in the third pram of my older sister is my baby brother sitting
Goodness
in it.
Do you have that photograph? If you'd love to see it later, if you could find it. Sounds like what a lovely keepsake. You have wonderful memories at that time, don't you?
Oh, you do. I mean, I grew up in a time where, during the war, 1941, there were no toys made, very
no,
few.
No.
There were no books, children's books published.
No.
No, no, no. hardly any. I think I got one for my fifth or sixth birthday. I think I got a picture book. Nanette got one too, and she got Peg's Fairy Tales, and it had the, it was one of the first books they brought out with the big coloured pictures.
Oh, they would have, that would have been wonderful.
And we used to just lie on the floor and find all the fairies in the
pictures. In the picture, yes.
But but we were very creative children, I think, in the fact that we were told to. Outside.
You had to be, didn't you? You had to make your own fun.
You made your own fun. And
yes.
You, I suppose they'd frown on it today, but we paid a lot of cowboys and Indians down in the back paddocks.
Well, I mean, there's, I think we've obviously, as a society, mature, but I do sometimes wonder whether the pendulum gets pushed a bit too far, because when you look at people from your generation, and I'm just a little bit, I'm actually a baby boomer, and you're, I guess, as a war baby, so very close, similar thing, it didn't really seem to affect us as we grew up.
I don't think it did. I think it made us sort of work out the pecking order and giving people a go and giving everyone a chance to have a do this.
It also taught you to be resourceful, didn't it?
Yes, very much.
On your own.
I had a very good dad who, he wrote poetry, would you believe? A very big man. He was 6'2". My mum was 4'9".
Oh, wow. Talk about a difference.
They used to pick her up and dance with her around the kitchen, and her feet did not touch the floor. He adored my mother, absolutely adored my mother. And he married her. He saw her when she was 16 riding a horse, and he told his mates he was going to marry that girl. And they said, you've got no... I've got a hope, because you're Catholic and she's a Methodist.
Oh, because that was very strong in those days,
yes,
wasn't it?
And there was no way you're going to marry that girl, and he did in 1938. But he walked away from his church completely.
In order to marry her. Well, that did give us some indication of the depth of his love.
He was a great leader. He was in John Cain Sr. He was a member for East Gippsland.
Ah, right.
And he didn't like politics because there was too much, during the war, there was too much.
Yet he still became a member of Parliament.
I think he found out that when he got in there.
Ah,
He was a Shire President of Warragul District for many years. He was president of all the things going on in the community. And... He was a great community leader, but when he got into politics, he saw a bit of a nasty side of politics, and during the war there
didn't
was
like that.
A lot of, not corruption, but, you know.
Yes.
And he didn't like it, and he said, I can do better outside politics, which he did. He got out of politics, and he just ended up working with the communities and...
Yes.
And doing things.
Being very hands-on in his community.
He built the... he and a group of dads built the Chadston Batesford Road Community Centre.
Right.
And when we came off the farm, we ended up in Chadston. And that was in 1958, I think. I'd almost left home by then, and but he saw that was a housing commission area, and they put all these people into this housing commission area, and there was nothing for the young people, and they were vandalising the place. So he and a group of dads decided they'd build a hall and they'd start a community thing. He did it all his life. He did it right from the word dot. He was... in Warragul, he was president of the school committee for 14 years at the primary school. He and a group of dads virtually built the Warrigal North Primary School, which was opened after we'd left. We'd left there by the time we'd left Warrigal. We left Warrigal when I was 14 because all the dairies went out of business because the Holdson and Nielsen, the milk cooperative, came into Warrigal and they collected everybody's milk and brought it into the central place in Warrigal. So all the little dairies that were located in the district around, they all disappeared. My dad saw it coming and he saw the need for ice. So he started an ice factory. He built an ice factory at the back of the house.
And this is Listen to Older Voices, a program that presents the stories of everyday Australians through the recollection of their lives.
He left school at 14, would you believe? But he learned how refrigeration and how to do that. He became the iceman for many years.
Good
and
Lord.
He opened the ice factory in Warrigal. And then he eventually he went bankrupt in about 1952, and he was building a new house for us in Warrigal. We'd outgrown our original one that my grandfather had built, and my grandfather built the dairy beside the house, and we'd outgrown that, and Dad was building a new house, and of course he stretched himself too far and he went bankrupt. And in those days you went bankrupt, you lost everything, you lost your house and a whole lot. So he went back to farming, and he was share farming at on a farm at Templestow in bottom of Fitzsimmons Lane, which is now the big park.
Yes.
And
it would have been quite different to how it is now, that whole area.
Oh, that area was country.
Yes.
It was all country. It was orchards and country.
So you felt very comfortable being there because it was your environment.
It was our environment. It was a very different environment because my dad had milked, had been on farms. My mum had, she'd built milk. We'd grown up surrounded by farms, but we hadn't sort of lived the farming life of milking cows and all that sort of thing. But we loved it because by that stage I was in high school.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that. Was that transition easy for you?
there's a funny story about that one. We were real country bumpkins. We sort of, the only time I'd ever been on a train was to go to my grandparents or other farms. And Dad used to put us on the train and Mum used to take us to Colac or Geelong, Drysdale or Harkaway or whatever. So he'd put us on the train and Mum would take us and then we'd come back. But they were country trains, they were different.
Mm.
You stuck your head out the window and watched the steam and
yes. You
know, and getting five children from Warrigal to Colac, I think it used to stress my mother out completely and she didn't know where she was. But it was the days of porters, so they'd trundle everything and we'd all run behind Mum and Mum used to collapse in the train and rest for a few hours before we got to our destination. But no, it was...
So you used the word, we were real country bumpkins. Did you find this change quite dramatic then?
Well, when we came to the city, we were in high school, and because we were at Templestow, we could have gone to Box Hill Tech, which was finished at year 10, but my sister was already in... She was in year 9 and I was in year 8.
Mm-hmm.
But we used to call them forms in those days. I was in form 2 and she was in form 3. My parents, they weren't really into educating girls, but they wanted to give the girls a good start in life, you know. And so it came up that we would go to Camberwell Girls' School, Mungarra Road in Camberwell, which meant we had to catch the bus, the Warrandyte bus we caught at the Templestowe General Store. We had to walk a mile to get to that, and then we caught the bus into Box Hill. We caught the train from Box Hill to East Camberwell, and we got off and we had a 10-minute walk to school.
Mm.
And I did that for 3 years.
Goodness me. That's, yeah, no wonder you remember it in detail, because that's quite a journey.
It's a journey.
That's
it's
quite a journey.
The Warrandyte kids used to get out, let out early from Camberwell, because we had to catch the Lilydale train. If we didn't catch the Lilydale train, we missed the connection to Warrandyte with the bus.
Right.
So we used to get out of school a bit earlier, and we used to run like crazy. If you missed the Warrandyte bus, then you ended up sitting out on the corner of what is now the Doncaster Shopping Centre.
Which was just open fields, I guess.
It had a general store.
A general store, right.
Right on the corner.
Right.
White's General Store was on the corner. And you'd sit there until Dad finished milking and he'd come in on the tractor and pick you up.
Sounds like you did miss it, that connection,
you
a couple
miss
of times.
It. Or you could walk home through the back paddocks, which took you an hour.
Join Helen and myself next week for part two of a story where we follow her as she grows into a young woman and becomes a school teacher, as well as meeting Ted Harmer, himself a teacher, and her future husband. That's Helen Harmer next week on Listen to Older Voices. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program. Listen to Older Voices is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program, and is podcast to you through the Toorak Times and TAG.